it's very humbling to even introduce a series of programs in the yeshiva in memory of Rabbi Soloveitchik Zatzal. We had a number of events for the public before Pesach. The Rav's 25th Yahrzeit was on Pesach. But we wanted to make sure to do something, and even to do something a little bit different in the yeshiva itself. So, Bershus the Rosh Yeshiva, I want to introduce Rabbi Schechter for a moment and introduce what it is that we're going to be trying to do over the coming weeks. It's very difficult for us, and if it's difficult for those of my generation, it's even more difficult for those in your generation, Talmidim, to appreciate the extent to which our Jewish lives stand on the shoulders of Rabbi Soloveitchik. It's very difficult for us to understand. Yaakov Avinu wakes up. He knows he was in a very holy spot. He knows it in Eretz Yisrael, but V'anochi lo yadati. I didn't quite appreciate, I didn't quite understand where I was. We are a generation that for the most part, and certainly you, the Talmidim, asher lo yadat Yosef, who didn't have the opportunity to understand who Rabbi Soloveitchik was, what it was like to sit and shear with the Rav, what it was like to walk on the streets here with Rabbi Soloveitchik. But so much of what we have, our Rosh Yeshiva, our Derech Halimud, our yeshiva, our community, our way of life, our hashkafas olam, so much more than we know is based on the greatness of Rabbi Soloveitchik. We thank the Ribono Shel Olam for bringing him to these shores, for bringing him into this yeshiva, because it's difficult to imagine what would be if Rabbi Soloveitchik had not been here. So we hope over the next couple of weeks, commemorating the 25th Yahrzeit, to have several of the Rav's Talmidim to speak about what it was like. It would take days or weeks for any one of them to explain what it was truly like and to just give you a fraction of the stories from their interactions with Rabbi Soloveitchik. But we're going to try. We're going to try not simply L'zecha Nishmas the Rav, but really because as a yeshiva we should understand. We should understand who he was. We should understand the yeshiva that we're in. We decided to try to have speakers from different generations, different decades. We had a little bit of overlap, but we tried to have views of the Rav from different times. We'll have today Rav Schechter Shlita. Tonight Rav Kahn will be speaking. We'll have Rabbi Dr. Bernard Rosenzweig, who so many of you unfortunately don't know, a giant himself. We know him, you may know him as Rabbi Michael Rosenzweig's father, but a giant who taught here for so many decades, who we're privileged to have come back and share his relationship and his memories of the Rav, as well as Rabbi Michael Taubes, who was from the later years of the opportunities of being able to hear from the Rav. This is just a snippet, just an opportunity to get a little bit of a glimpse. I encourage you. I know we have so many special programs and speakers and things. Please make every one of these speeches. And if for some reason you can't, please listen to them on YU Torah. Because it is really our obligation. It is our obligation to understand where we are and in whose shoes ultimately we stand. Rav Schechter Shlita.
This yeshiva was originally a combination of two different yeshivas from the Lower East Side. One was Yeshivas Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan that was founded soon after Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan passed away in the late 1800s. And the other one was Yeshivas Eitz Chaim. Eitz Chaim is the name of Volozhin. Volozhin was the major yeshiva that was the first yeshiva that was founded in Lithuania, a big yeshiva, founded by Rabbi Chaim Volozhin something like 1802, something like that. He was the former student of the Vilna Gaon. And it lasted for 90 years. And the last Rosh Yeshiva in Volozhin was the Netziv. He was Rosh Yeshiva for 39 years. That's a long time. 39 years is an awful long time. So the within the 39 years, part of the time a Rosh Yeshiva was the Beis Halevi, Rabbi Yoshe Ben Soloveitchik, after whom Rabbi Soloveitchik was named. And then he became Rav in Brisk, and then his son, Chaim Soloveitchik, became Rosh Yeshiva in Volozhin. Chaim Soloveitchik married the granddaughter of the Netziv, and the last years they were Rosh Yeshiva. The Netziv, the grandfather, with Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik, married to the granddaughter, with the Rosh Yeshiva in Volozhin. And then there was a whole Asik, and they both decided, there was a whole big meeting of all the Rabban, and they decided to close the yeshiva. Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik had three sons. The oldest son was not a healthy person. His name was Gershon, so that's why you never hear about him. He had a son, Moshe Soloveitchik, who lived in Zurich after the Second World War. He was a prominent leader of a Swiss Jewry. He died about 15, 20 years ago. The second son was Rabbi Moshe Soloveitchik, learned by the father. And the youngest son was Rabbi Dovala Soloveitchik, who later, after Rabbi Chaim passed away, was appointed the rabbi in Brisk. He was known as the Briskerov after the war. Rabbi Soloveitchik's mother felt, Rabbi Soloveitchik's mother's maiden name was Feinstein. Her father, Rabbi Elio Feinstein, was an uncle of Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. So Rabbi Soloveitchik's mother was a first cousin of Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. And Rabbi Soloveitchik spent many years learning with that grandfather. When he was very young, he only visited Rabbi Chaim a few times, but the influence of Rabbi Chaim was given over to him by his father, Rabbi Moshe Soloveitchik, who had transmitted many, many traditions and learning in Hanhoges and how to observe mitzvahs and so on. Rabbi Soloveitchik's mother was a very learned woman. She was very bright. And she felt that in the modern world, forget about America, even in Europe, everyone's going to university, and those who went to university would give up the universities for the hotbed of apikorsis. Whoever would go to university would become an apikorsis. So she felt in order to be a leader among the Jews in this era, you have to go to university to be able to speak the language of the of these people. So she thought that it's best for her son, Rabbi Yoshe Ben, that he should go to university. He went to University of Berlin, and he got a degree. And then he told us that how many tefillahs that he offered that he shouldn't have to come to America. He was praying and praying. America was known as the Treifen in Medina. The stones in the street were assumed to be treif. Everything in America is treif. He didn't want to come to America. He wanted to stay in Europe with all the tzaddikim and all the chassidim and all the lamdim. And he says he thanks God that he didn't answer his prayers. He said he would have been killed by the Nazis like everybody else. He said, when you say Shema Kolena, Yandov, it's Kabbalah, Berachamim, Averotzen, Estvilosein, it means you should edit our prayers, you should filter through the prayers. Whatever does make sense, don't accept. We don't always know what's in our best interest. We pray we should stay in Europe. We pray, I want to marry this girl, and I want to be accepted to this graduate school, I want to learn in this yeshiva. We don't realize that that's poison, that that's not the best thing for you. But that was one of the things Rabbi Soloveitchik said, he used to pray he should be able to stay in Europe. So it's our fortune, America's fortune, that his prayers were not accepted and he had to come to America. How did he come to America? You can't come to America unless you have a job lined up at that time. So the job lined up was to be in Skokie Yeshiva. He was going to be Rosh Yeshiva Skokie Yeshiva. When he landed in America, so they notified him that they're broke and they can't pay him any salary. So that's the good fortune of YU, that he didn't go to Skokie. So he needed a parnasa, he needed a position. So soon after he arrived, they needed a major rabbinic figure in Boston. So he wanted to take that position, but he didn't have any smicha. So how can you be a rabbi if you don't have any smicha? To be the head of the yeshiva Skokie, you don't need any smicha. You just know how to say a shiur. So he needed a smicha. So the Kovner Rav was still alive. Kovner Rav, his name was Kahana Shapira. His name was Shapira, but he was related to the Soloveitchik family. He was also Bezerai, who was a descendant from Rabbi Chaim Volozhiner. That's what he writes on the first page of the Sefer. So he sent the smicha by telegram. That's what they say. That was probably the first smicha given by telegram. It cost money for every word in the telegram. So he just wrote Bikitsa. They printed the telegram. Yuri, Yuri, Yod, Yod, Halachik. That was his name. So that was good enough, and he got the position, he got a rabbinical position in Boston. At that time, Orthodoxy was dying out in America, and all the shuls all over the country, all the shuls were taking down the mechitzas and having mixeding, and many of the European rabbanim didn't think that it's so terrible. They didn't want to give up their rabbinical position. They were prepared to stay in the shul, even though it was going to have mixed seating. Soloveitchik waged a major war against this, and he kept on speaking in public that it's not permissible. You're not allowed to daven in such a shul with mixed seating. And one of the rebbes, later years, one who was a rebbe in yeshiva at that time was a Talmud. So the practice at that time was that the boys were not wealthy, so the boys would take a position as a chazan for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, shliach tzibur, a bal tikeya, to be a rabbi. So one of the boys was a shtikel abatlan, a shlamil, so he asked Rabbi Soloveitchik, he was very nervous, well, he was nervous even later in life, he asked Rabbi Soloveitchik if he could get him a rabbinical position in Boston, because he was such a batlan, he couldn't get on his own. So he says, Rabbi Soloveitchik said to him on a straight face, he said he was a European, this rabbi, so he spoke Yiddish. So he said, so Rabbi Soloveitchik said, do you want, with a mechitza, do you want mixed seating? Because if you take mixed seating, you get more money. So he was bewildered. This Rebbe was, when he was a bach and later, he was always very nervous. So he said, you mean you're permitted to take a position of mixed seating? So he said, Rabbi Soloveitchik told him in Yiddish, I'm telling you my opinion with full awareness of the consequences of what I'm saying. One who dabs in a shul with mixed seating is like davening in a church. But not everybody agrees to me. Not everybody agrees with me. Many of the European rabbanim remain in their shuls, even though they took down the mechitza, they have big seating. So if you want to follow them, I'll get you a rabbanis. Will you make more money? So he said, no, he wants to follow him. So he got him a position without mixed seating. He was waging this war. At that time, I don't think he thought he was going to win the war, but he felt you have to fight out the battle. He was a big stickler on all the dinim, on all the minhagim. You don't compromise on anything. He used to be insistent all the years. He used to be insistent of following all the minhagim in the Shulchan Aruch. Even though the Mishnah Berurah says that nobody does that anymore. I used to wonder, what is Rabbi Soloveitchik when he gets on Aliyah? He turns to the side. Where did he get that from? Nobody else does like that. That's what it says in the Shulchan Aruch. So the Mishnah Berurah says nobody does that anymore. A lot of things like that. It says in the Shulchan Aruch. Rabbi Soloveitchik used to do what it says in the Shulchan Aruch. Mishnah Berurah says nobody does that anymore. But he didn't follow the Mishnah. He used to follow what it said in the Shulchan Aruch. So he insisted he had this battle, and he won. An Orthodoxy won. An Orthodoxy survived. I remember, in fact, it was in the late 50s. There used to be big magazines. Now we only have small magazines like Time magazine. Then there used to be two big magazines, Look and Life. So one of them, I forgot which one, was going to write a whole article about Judaism in America. So the one who was going to write the article was only going to write about the conservative and the reform because the Orthodox were disappearing. So people kept on insisting, why don't you interview Rabbi Soloveitchik? Interview Rabbi Soloveitchik. Write something about the Orthodox. Kept on resisting till he finally agreed. He met Rabbi Soloveitchik. He fell in love with him. He only wrote about the Orthodox. He didn't write anything about the reform and the conservative. And the cover had the picture of Mrs. Fink from Scranton benching Licht, the two candles lit, and she's holding her hands over her eyes. And then they had photographs of Rabbi Soloveitchik giving the shir in his classroom. I remember the shir at that time always used to be in Yiddish. All the shirim in the yeshiva used to be in Yiddish. In the high school, they used to be in English. But after the high school, all the shirim were in Yiddish. So the cover, the photographer, so Rabbi Soloveitchik wanted the photographer came into the classroom, covered the photographer, he wanted the Zachary to understand the shir. So he said it in English. But he put in so many highfalutin technical terms from Greek and Latin. I'm sure the photographer didn't understand one word of the shir. But the nana of the photographer, Sir Rabbi Soloveitchik, gave the shir in English that day. I remember on another occasion when Middle States came to evaluate the yeshiva, that was the next year. That was the first year. Then the next year when Middle States came to evaluate, so they came to evaluate the yeshiva as well. So they sat in on Rabbi Soloveitchik's shir. So they were people who knew how to learn a little bit, but he gave the shir in English that day also in honor of the guests from the Middle States. Otherwise, the shir were all in Yiddish, until one day there was one student who didn't know one word of Yiddish. And he only wanted to be in Rabbi Soloveitchik's shir. So he sat there the first day, didn't understand one word. And then Rabbi Soloveitchik, b'mikra, walked into the Beis Medrash. He never used to walk into the Beis Medrash. He used to either stay by his mother, stay in the dormitory. After his mother passed away, his mother used to live across the street. After his mother passed away, so he used to stay in the dormitory. So on one occasion, that day, he walked into the Beis Medrash and he asked this one student, were you able to follow the shir? Because he never learned in yeshiva all the years. He came after he graduated college. So he said, no, he's going to have to go to a different shir because he doesn't understand Yiddish. So he said, don't switch yet. Give it another time. Give it another try. So the next day, the shir was in English. Rabbi Soloveitchik wanted everybody to understand. He switched the shir to English. So at that time, Rabbi Soloveitchik did not, I don't think he thought that he was going to be successful in this battle, but still he felt obligated, you have to fight out the battle. 1935, before Rabbi Soloveitchik came to the yeshiva, his father was Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. His father was offered a position. This was the Shiva Eitz Chaim. This was a carryover from Volozhin. So Rav Moshe Soloveitchik's father, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, was in Volozhin, the yeshiva. So while Rav Chaim Soloveitchik was still alive at the end of his life, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik was offered a position here. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik recommended he should not come. So he took a Rabbanus instead. And then later, years later, when he didn't have the Rabbanus and he didn't have a position, the Rav Chaim had passed away already. So then when they offered him again, he quit his position in Europe because of an Asik, and then he quit without any other Parnassa. He quit his position on religious grounds, and he had no other Parnassa as a backup. So within a week or two, he was offered a position again to come to America. So he came, and he was Rosh Yeshiva here. At that time, the first while that he came here to America, his children were still in Europe. So Rabbi Soloveitchik told over this story. He became Bar Mitzvah in Europe. His parents weren't there. They were here in America. So his uncle taught him how to lay tefillin. So the uncle taught him how to lay tefillin, so the shel-yad went like this, like by the Hasidim, like Svardim do. And he taught him that when you put on tefillin and chalamot, you don't say a bracha. So when he came to America to join up with his parents, so his father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, said, "What do you mean, tefillin achalamayit? In Volozhin, nobody wore tefillin achalamayit. That's out of the question. You're not going to wear tefillin achalamayit. As far as wearing a tefillin like that, in Volozhin, some of the people wore tefillin like that, the minority. Most of them had the tefillin go this way. So that he'll let him do, the way his uncle arranged it for him. Tefillin achalamayit, that's out of the question. It was such sticklers, they followed all their traditions. From Volozhin. Volozhin means from a prime Volozhin, from the Vilna Gaon. All the traditions from the Vilna Gaon. So in 1935, there was a position available when Rabbi Soloveitchik was not yet in yeshiva. His father was still alive. His father was here in yeshiva till he died in early 1941. So Rabbi Soloveitchik was a candidate for the Rabbanus in Tel Aviv. In fact, his daughter, who later married Rabbi Lichtenstein, whose yahrzeit it is today, his daughter was born when he was away, when he was in Eretz Yisrael. And Rabbi Soloveitchik had a brother-in-law, Professor Lisman, who taught math in the college here. So I remember at the Sheva Brachas, when Rabbi Lichtenstein got married to Rabbi Soloveitchik's daughter, so Professor Lisman spoke. So he said, minig used to be that the father always paces the hallway when his wife has a baby. So Rabbi Soloveitchik was in Eretz Yisrael, couldn't pace it. He said he was the honorary father. He was pacing the hallways when Mrs. Soloveitchik was delivering the baby. He was the honorary father of the baby. So it's our good fortune that Rabbi Soloveitchik did not get the Rabbanus in Tel Aviv. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been here in the yeshiva. We wouldn't have anything like we have today. He didn't. He was not successful in his position because at that time he was one of the organizers of the Aguda here in America. He was obviously an agudist. And in Eretz Yisrael, the only one of the Rabbanim who were connected with the Mizrahi. So at that time, he didn't get the position. Later on, he was, after Rav Moshe Soloveitchik passed away in 1941, so the Esther Rav Soloveitchik, at that time, Rav Soloveitchik had for about a year and a half, he had a kibbutz, a group of young Talmid Chachamim. Some of them had learned in Eretz Yisrael, some of them had learned in Europe. And Dr. Revel was the head of the yeshiva at that time, so Dr. Revel used to sponsor this kibbutz in Boston. He paid the money for it, and he used to give Rav Soloveitchik, he used to give shiurim there. Then after his father passed away here in New York, so the administration of the yeshiva invited Rav Soloveitchik to come here, so he switched over here, and he gave the shiurim here in the yeshiva. His influence was not only on the yeshiva. He has such a different style of learning. He had the style from his grandfather, Rav Chaim, that he got from his father. He gave much more. He gave over much more Torah than his father. My father learned here in the yeshiva. My father said, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik gave a shiur once every week and a half. And the shiur was a half an hour. I have notes from my father for 3 years of learning about Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, less than I heard from Rav Soloveitchik in 1 month. Rav Soloveitchik in 1 month gave many more shiurim, said much more Torah. So Rav Soloveitchik's influence was not only here on the yeshiva. He had such a clear style of giving a shiur. In fact, some of the rebbes in the yeshiva used to make fun. They were jealous of Rav Soloveitchik. Used to make fun. They said even Ralph Bunch can understand his yeshiva. Ralph Bunch was a black man who was the Secretary General of the United Nations at that time. So he had nothing to do with Torah. So they said Rav Soloveitchik is so clear, even Ralph Bunch can understand his yeshiva. A goy can come in on the cold, not knowing anything. Rav Soloveitchik would begin the Pasuk in Chumash, and Torah Shabbat Peh says like this, and Abai says like that, and Rava says like that, and Rashi says like this. He would lead you from the beginning to the end. Other people will give a shiur. They will start from Rabbi Kivegas, Kasha on the Marshal. You start from the beginning. So you start from the beginning, so you're lost. Before you even begin, you're lost. The godless of Rabbi Soloveitchik was, he would give a shiur sometimes for hours. He would sometimes give a shiur for 6 hours. People would follow from the beginning to the end. People would sit glued to their seats and follow. Because he explained everything. He would take the most complicated Gemara and make it easy. That was the whole godless. Others took an easy Gemara and make it complicated. Rabbi Soloveitchik would take the most complicated Gemara and make it easy. In fact, he once announced that he used to give a shiur every year, every Matzoi Shabbos in Boston. In Maimonides. So once he said they should announce he's going to give a shiur on Tehillim. So I remember one of the Balabatim, Mr. Millen, said, "But Rabbi, Tehillim is so easy." So he said, "Don't worry, Mr. Millen, I'll make it complicated." That wasn't his style. He took the most complicated thing and he made it easy. He made everything simple. He said, no, he didn't simplify it, he didn't water it down, he explained everything very well. Everyone could understand it. So his influence was not only here in the yeshiva in this style of learning, his influence was on the whole country. At that time, it was a very common practice. The rabbis would have the New York Times delivered to their homes on Shabbos morning. They would read the latest news, and they would give a sermon in the morning on current events, a comment on current events. Rabbi Soloveitchik insisted that that's ridiculous. You have to raise the level of education for the Balabatim. The Chachamim understand Torah Tzivolon HaMoshe and Marosh Gilatang. The Torah belongs to all of Kalei Yisrael, belongs to the farmers also. The Gemara says that the farmer once came to Rabbi and he said, "You're a gazlan. You stole the Torah. We're all shutfim in the Torah. I want my chelik in the Yerusha. Torah Tzivolon HaMoshe and Marosh, it's a Yerusha to all of us. Why did the Rabbanim steal it?" Rabbi Soloveitchik said the Rabbanim have to figure out how to teach Torah on a level that the Balabatim will understand something. You shouldn't water it down. You shouldn't simplify it. You have an obligation to explain it. So just like in the newspapers and the magazines, when there's a new discovery in physics or chemistry or mathematics or biology or medicine, so they explain to the public what it is. They don't fully understand like the graduate student in a graduate school in this field, but they understand at least for the layman. They explain to the layman what's going on. So he felt all the Rabbanim have an obligation to explain Torah to the Balabatim, not to water it down, and have an obligation to prepare the rushes. Hashkafet the Rosh is to elevate the level of the Balabatim. They should understand what you're talking about. Raise them up. Don't talk down to their level. Bring up the level of the Balabatim. And he had many of his musmachim and followed his instructions. And they did succeed. At that time, almost all the Rabbanim in America were from YU. There were hardly any other yeshivas, and the other yeshivas didn't encourage their boys to go into hardly anybody went to the rabbinate. So most of the musmachim, most of the rabbis in America were from YU. Rabbi Soloveitchik felt an obsession that he has to give over all of the Torah that he has. He said, just like the Novi is over an aver if he's koivish nevuah, so he's obligated to the psukim and Novi say that it's like a fire burning within me. I can't control it. I have to give out the nevuah. So too, he felt there's no din of koivish teros and chayim misa. But he said, we all those who have a lot of Torah have an obligation to share with everybody else. And he had an awful lot of Torah. He had traditions, the Gemara all over. A lot of times when he would give the shiur, especially in Yiddish, he would say word for word what he heard from his father. His brother, Shmuel Soloveitchik, used to teach chemistry here in the college. I remember the brother said when the father would learn with them together, so he would make them say over, after he learned with them, make them say over word for word exactly the way he said. So he said when his brother, Rabbi Yoshe Beir, would say over slightly, the father would slap him. No, you have to say over word for word exactly. Then he said, the father would learn with them, then he would ask him, did you understand what I said? So Shmuel said, I would always say yes. Then my brother would say no. So my father would slap him. He said, that's why I'm the chemist, and that's why my brother's the Rosh Yeshiva. How did it happen that Rabbi Soloveitchik and Donis the Rabs? I remember in my time, when I was a student here in the yeshiva, Dr. Belkin was officially the Rosh Yeshiva. When Dr. Revel passed away, Dr. Revel was both the Rosh Yeshiva and the president of the college. When he passed away, so there was a machlekes, a big machlekes, who should be appointed Rosh Yeshiva. Rabbi Soloveitchik offered, told us, he offered many prayers. He wanted to be the Rosh Yeshiva. And his prayers were not answered. And he said, years later, he thanks the Rabbanu Shalom for not answering his prayers. If he would have been appointed Rosh Yeshiva, he would have to go shnora money. He would have to go travel all over the world and raise all the money. And he says he thanks Dr. Belkin that he does that. And he lets me sit and learn and I give the shiur. He said, even if they wouldn't pay me a salary, I would pay them. That they should let me give the shiur. But they're kind enough that they pay me a salary also for saying the shiur. Rabbi Soloveitchik's influence was all over the country. He was fighting reform and fighting conservative. And he had this obsession that he had to give over everything that he had. So he used to speak very often from Mizrahi. They only published five drushas, chamesh drushot, but there were many more than five. There are people alive today who remember the other drushas, not the chamesh drushot. They should publish all of those as well. At that time, Rabbi Soloveitchik, I think, was the only one who used to give drushas every year in Aseret Me'tshuva, Kinos Tshuva. Now it's very popular. Every other shul has a drusha in Aseret Me'tshuva. In Europe, that was a common practice. The Nadi Behuda lived in the 1700s. He printed many of the drushas that he gave in Aseret Me'tshuva. It's very common. He used to give drushas on Zayin Odo, the yahrzeit of Moshe Rabbeinu. So Rabbi Soloveitchik used to give a yahrzeit drusha every year on his father's yahrzeit. His father died in 1941. He used to give a shir, a four-hour shir, every year on Gimel Shvat. Gimel Shvat, he would say, the four-hour shir was divided in two parts. The first 2 hours was a shir in Gemara, artistically prepared. It was something out of this world. And then the second half was a drasha, hashkafa, based on the halacha that he had developed in the first half of the shir. People would come from out of town. People would fly by plane to come to the yahrzeit drasha. And then Rabbi Soloveitchik gave a shir every Tuesday night. He would come into the yeshiva. He would come in. He lived in Boston all the time. So he would come in from Boston on Tuesday morning. We give a shir for 2 hours to the college students, then give a shir 2 hours for the smicha students. Then Tuesday night, he would give a shir for the balabatim. And then on Wednesday morning, he give a shir 2 hours for the college students, he give a shir 2 hours for the smicha students. Different mesichtas. The college students, smicha students, totally unrelated. Different mesichtas. The Tuesday night shir for the balabatim was the third mesichta, totally different. Unrelated. He felt obligated to give over everything. And the shir for the balabatim was that people would come in from out of town. There were businessmen who lived out of town. People came from Europe. If they knew they had to do business in New York, they would make sure they come in, they'd be in New York, be in Manhattan on Tuesday night to attend the Shia, and then they go back to Europe or go back to California, whatever it is. They would come in to do their business and make sure they're there on Tuesday night. So Rabbi Soloveitchik used to give a Shia whenever there was an occasion. So the rabbinic alumni of the Shiva used to sponsor him always before Pesach. He would give a Shia for the Mesmachim. The Rabbinical Council of America had him always speak. They used to have two conventions every year, one in the winter, one in the summer. Rabbi Soloveitchik was always the main speaker. There's so many drushas. He used to give usually drushas for the RCA. There's so many drushas that were not printed yet. Many, many drushas. All the drushas were outstanding, all on Hashkofa. It was unbelievable. I remember when I first entered the shir, we were so petrified. The shir began before Rosh Hashanah. We were so scared. There was a shul in Boston where they took down the mechitza. And the first night of Slichas, the chairman of the board got up and he said, we're not going to listen. They took down the mechitza. And Rabbi Soloveitchik was very involved and he said, they're not allowed to take down the mechitza. And they didn't listen to it. So he put an advertisement in the Boston newspaper. He puts in cherem anybody who davens in the shul. He got Rabbi Blazer Silver to sign the cherem with him. That's how they said Rabbi Blazer Silver was a colorful person. So when Rabbi Soloveitchik called him on the phone, he said, cherem anytime. Put my name on. Okay, anytime. So the chairman of the board got up the first night of Slichas with the mixed seating, and he said, we're not going to listen to these old fogies. We're going to go progress. We have to go ahead. He got a heart attack, and he dropped dead that night. So we were so petrified. Rabbi Soloveitchik hadn't come in yet to the yeshiva. We were so petrified. This guy can give you a curse, and you can drop dead. So we better behave in his class. I remember they announced, they put up a sign, Mr. Abrams was the Menahel of Yeshiva, put up a sign at that time, Rabbi Soloveitchik will not come in until the third week or the fourth week into the Zman. He wants all the students to prepare to Davav Amen Aleph in Sanhedrin, the Yeshiva was on. So I was wondering, why is he different from everybody else? Everybody else started 3 weeks ago. Why does he have to start 3 weeks late? Why do we have to prepare to Davav? When he came in, we all understood why. He used to speak Yiddish and he used to speak like a machine gun. He spoke so quickly. He spoke so much. So he gave 2 hours shiur on Tuesday, 2 hours shiur on Wednesday. He was already up to Davav. The other rabbis were on Dav Gimel. On Dav Beis, on Dav Gimel, on Dav Dalet. He gave 2 shiurim, he already got up to Davav. That's why he said everyone should prepare to Davav. He was going to speak quickly. He used to cover a lot of ground. My uncle was a Muslim when Ishi. My uncle said he learned Bava Basa by Rabbi Soloveitchik. In one Zman, they learned Bava Basa till Dav Samach. From Dav Beis till Dav Samach. The end of Cheskes Habad. In our time, is already a Yeridus Hadar, so he would cover between 35 and 45 blot every year. When he was healthy, he used to cover a lot of ground. So when Dr. Revel passed away, so there was an Asik, who's going to be the Rosh Yeshiva? So the students voted that Dr. Belton should be the Rosh Yeshiva. Then there's the next vote, well, there was an Asik who should be the president of the college. There was yet no university. Dr. Belton made it into a university by having all the graduate schools. So again, the people who chose him as Rosh Yeshiva didn't think he should become the president of the college that would ruin him. But there was a whole political maneuver. People, some of the Balabatim felt that this man is a batlan, Dr. Belkin is a batlan, he's a shlemiel, they're going to run the show behind the scenes. So they appointed him, the board appointed him as the president of the college. Once he appointed the president of the college, he didn't act like a batlan anymore. So he took control of everything. He didn't let the Balabatim do anything. He controlled everything. So years later, the students, in my time, I remember, the students felt bad. He's the Rosh Yeshiva. He didn't give any shiurim in our time. He was busy making graduate schools. How was he the Rosh Yeshiva? So they wanted to give the title to Rav Soloveitchik. So the students said, we're going to call him the Rav. Every city in Europe, they had a Rav and they had a Rosh Yeshiva. So Dr. Belton would be the Rosh Yeshiva. Rav Soloveitchik would be the Rav. So that's why they called him the Rav. Rav Kook has an essay. He writes it about the Avnei Nezer, but he quotes the Gemara in Sukkah says about Rav Blazer ben Hurkanes. He never said anything shaloshama mipi rabbi. Everything he said, he had a tradition for. But then the Pirkei de Rav Blazer, which supposedly is written by Rav Blazer ben Hurkanes, it says he said chidushim shaloshamasan oizim isinai. Said chidushim that no one ever heard before since Maimon HaSinai. So isn't that a contradiction? Here it says he only said things that he heard from his father. Rav Kook has an essay where he explains. He only said things that he heard from his Rebbe, but he paid such attention when he heard something from his Rebbe, he said that this implies this and this implies that. So he heard more from his Rebbe than everybody else heard. He said things, Shalosh HaMazon doesn't mean that, but he heard everything from the Rebbe. That's what Rav Soloveitchik was. Rav Soloveitchik, we say, the Gemara says this. Sometimes Rav Soloveitchik would just quote a pasuk in the Shia, and he would pause in the middle of the pasuk and recite the pasuk with such an inflection. We would wonder, that's what the pasuk means. He didn't say any, he didn't give any commentary. He just paused and he said the pasuk one way. That's when we actually understood what it said. He would say over Gemara, he would say it over in Yiddish. What we thought to ourselves, that's what it means. Just the translation. When he translated, he would explain what it means. He would say over things that no one else said, but he just said over what it said, what he heard from his father, and what it says in the Gemara. He would derive from the Gemara more than most other people would. He was known as the biggest Rosh Yeshiva of the generation during his lifetime. He was such a fantastic Bal Mazba, everything he would explain. The Rabbanim, the big Goyim in Eretz Yisrael, used to chalash to hear his Divrei when they would sometimes play Yiddish tapes for them. They would say, Zeh mi'olam acher. He was from a different world, a different style of learning, a different style. It was unbelievable. I think it'll really be of extreme value to listen to all of the different speakers in the course of the next coming weeks to hear all of the impressions that he made on all of the Talmidim. Thank you.